always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
It was a trip 2 years in the making. American Airlines tracking down the last living World War II vets, offering to fly them over here to Normandy for the 80th anniversary of D-Day. There were just 68 heroes able to be on that flight. The flight touched down in Paris, where the vets visited the American cemetery. Then it was off to Normandy, where the vets were greeted by French locals, thrilled to see the men and women who helped liberate their country. Robert Padigo, 100 years old today. He was an aerial bomber. And just before this broadcast, we were at Omaha Beach with Mr. Padigo as he collected a container of sand and remembered the friends he lost on that day, an emotional moment for so many as they pay respects to their fallen brothers.
4:06, and welcome into the, well, it's sunny outside, the dry hump Wednesday edition of the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. Chris Arp's back from my weekend trip. In studio with me, of course, is Joey V, executive producer of the show. Joey, how are you?
We missed you, buddy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Checks in the mail. And we're doing that ships in the night type of thing, Tim and I, today. I've been out the last couple of days. Tim will be out for the next couple of days. Tim, where in the world are you today?
Chris, I scooted just about, just shy of 4 hours to the east, to the northeast. I am in beautiful downtown Indianapolis, Indiana.
Beautiful. I have been to Indianapolis a couple of times. I know when Becky and I drive to the East Coast, we pass through Indianapolis. I've gone past actually the Indianapolis 500 when it was going on, and a couple of football games. Indianapolis is, I hate to use the words that the liberals have hijacked, but it is a quote-unquote progressive town, but in the good sense, not in the sense of the crazy liberal sense. If we've talked about it many times here, Tim, about our St. Louis downtown, it's dying. Our region is dying. You go there to Indianapolis, and I'm sure you've been there many times as well and have seen the sights. Indianapolis is growing and prospering, and they have a Republican legislature and governor, I believe.
Mm-hmm. They sure do, Chris. They are a trifecta state. I am high atop the JW Marriott in downtown Indianapolis. And, you know, Chris, I'm sure that if I talk to locals around here, and I'm actually going to speak with quite a few Indiana legislators tonight. I'm over here for an ALEC Midwest Regional Academy on regulatory reform. So we've got legislators here from Missouri, Indiana, Illinois. I think we have some from some other states further away, about 25, 30 legislators, state legislators. And I'm sure if I talked to the Indiana folks, they would say, well, yeah, this, that, and the other problem with Indianapolis. But Chris, on the whole, you're exactly right. I mean, I would take Indianapolis any day over St. Louis. This is a vibrant downtown. There are people of all shapes, colors, sizes, creeds, and codes wandering around. They have a very active convention. They have a very active convention business here. There's I can see Lucas Field, where the Colts play from my window here. And again, I'm sure they have urban issues like everybody else. But Chris, on the whole, my understanding is Indianapolis is generally considered a lot safer, a lot more approachable, and honestly, just a lot better well off than what we see in St. Louis. St. Louis could be as good as Indianapolis, as Nashville, as Louisville, all of these Midwest cities that have seen renaissances. Chris, we seem to be stuck in the mud for some reason, and I think it's because of our leadership.
Well, Tim, not according to Mayor Tashara Jones. She said the city of St. Louis is in a renaissance. Crime is down. Murder is down. What city are you talking about, my friend? That's what Tashara said, Mayor Jones said. You guys, us right-wingers are living in a fantasy world. It's all roses and champagne here in the city of St. Louis.
Chris, I'm gonna respectfully disagree with my sister from another mother. I'm gonna disagree with Mayor Jones. And Chris, when you cook the books, Does that count? Does that really count that crime is down when you cook the books? You and I have talked to David Stokes about this for many months now, and they are rigging the stats. And just ask anybody who dares to take their life in their hands, like I did a few weeks ago, take my family to the ball game. Let me tell you, your head's on a swivel. You're thanking the good Lord for the extra police presence that's always around the Cardinals games. But go downtown when there's not a Cardinals or Blues game. And I dare you, just wander around after dark and see what befalls you. It is a city that was once great. It could see great days again. We have so many great people like the St. Louis City Republican Club who are trying to do what they can. There's a lot of great business owners, but it seems that the leadership at the top would rather pay homage to the furthest left-wing liberal progressive part of their party instead of doing things like funding the police, supporting law enforcement, having better schools. You know, we could go on.
Yeah, it is 4:10. And then I wanted to say, Tim, 4:10, Tim, we've got a big, big show today, a special show today. You don't want to leave your radio. You want to be tuning in from 4 to 6 today. And, of course, after the show, we have Larry Connors from 6 to 8. But at 4:24 coming up, we'll have Zach Smith, of course, the senior legal fellow of the Heritage Foundation. We have not talked to Zach since the verdict, so we want to get his expert legal opinion, of course. Chris's Corner, Tim, I had one all planned out today. I wrote an article for Red State on how China is now the leading EV exporter, and they are sucking up all of our personal information like they do the people that subscribe to TikTok. So I had an article in Red State on that today. I was going to talk about that. But then while I was doing show prep, I got the newsletter that Katie sends out every Wednesday, and in it is the monologue that our good friend Ken Williams gave today on the Vic Porcelli show on his disgust with the Trump verdict. And so we're going to replay that for Chris's Corner. It's about 9 minutes, but it is worth it. I got to tell you, Ken is a passionate guy. He loves his country. He loves Donald Trump. He loves his family. He's a great guy. I've never seen him, Tim, and you worked with him at the other station more than I did. I don't think I've ever seen Ken this passionate before. And it was a controlled passion. He wasn't out of control or anything, but he was very, very passionate, and you could hear it in his voice. We're going to play that in Chris's Corner at 5:07, speaker's stump speech.
Yes, Chris, being that I was just giving my little rant and rave on Indianapolis versus St. Louis, I'm going to talk about why state policies matter. There was a big story that came out of California this week, and I'm going to explain what happens when you have left-wing liberalism on steroids.
And our special guest, you want to be listening to your radio at 5:24. We will have Christopher Ruddy. He is the CEO of Newsmax and the founder. We're going to talk to him for a few moments about Newsmax, their phenomenal growth. We're going to talk to him about, has he talked to President Trump? You know that President Trump and Chris Ruddy are personal friends, and he is an advisor to the president. So we'll see if he had some words from us that Donald Trump told to him. And, you know, Tim, I want to talk to Chris about what we've talked about many times here the last couple of weeks, of how when you watch the Sunday shows, the moderators now feel that they need to fact check the Republican guest in real time. And they don't seem to do that as much for the Democratic guest. And I'm going to ask Chris, hey, when is Newsmax going to have their Meet the Press, their Face the Nation, their This Week with Somebody's show to compete with the Sunday show? So we've got a huge show for you today. 4:24, Zach Smith's coming up, Tim.
I'm really excited to talk to Chris Ruddy. I receive the Newsmax updates throughout the day, and I'm going to thank Chris for those because they're very helpful with show prep and keeping us up to speed on everything going on around around the world. Yeah. I love their reporting. I love the way the emails we receive from them, and anybody can receive these. You can go to newsmax.com and sign up, and you get these great little nuggets, great little headlines, and then you can click on the stories and read a little deeper into that. Chris, one of our listeners, the famous, not Joey V, but Joey B.
Balls.
Joey B. Balls. He must have just been listening to us, or maybe his ears were ringing. He just sent me a tweet, a post from our good friend Jane Duker.
Oh.
And he just sent me the post of Jane, and I'm assuming Joey B was sending me this to push back on what you were claiming, Mayor Tashara Jones was claiming about the city. Jane Duker says, well, City of St. Louis homicide update. So far this year, St. Louis has 74 homicides that have been recorded. On the other hand, Kansas City only has 60. Kansas City, because of course it includes Jackson County, mm-hmm. has 224,000 more citizens, covers three times the area. So the point is, in a much smaller area with a smaller population, St. Louis has 14 more homicides. Jane Duker, Chris, says, hashtag not a renaissance. There you have it.
And you know, Tim, today is June 5th. And as we know, you know, you and I are a little long in the tooth. We got some gray hair there. We got some wrinkles around the eyelids. When it gets hot in the summer, in the hood, doesn't matter what major city you're in, the homicides tend to go up. So we're already at 74. We're already beating Kansas City by 14 homicides. I would predict, sadly, that that number will increase probably dramatically this summer. And hell, we may even set a record. You know, Tim, you are in Indianapolis currently, next couple of days. I was traveling. I was in Chicago on Monday and Tuesday. Guess
what? Glad you made it back safely.
I appreciate that. I want to give a shout out at the airport. I ran into John and Jan Bruner. Of course, John was the found Vijan. He ran for Senate and governor. He and his wife were on their way to Rome. They were going to spend Rome with their 17 grandchildren. So it was good to run into them. And John gave me a book that he wrote. Tim, is called Battlefield Verses, Fire for Effect. Put on the helmet of salvation, which is the word of God. And it's a book of biblical verses for when you are facing full hard times and the enemy is attacking you. John Bruner has a book called Battlefield Verses that help get you through. One other thing, Tim, before we left for Chicago, this weekend I did a little shooting at the second annual Shoot Nanny that was put on by the Jeffco Patriot Initiative out in DeSoto. You pay a few dollars and you're able to shoot all different types of guns and just shoot up some stuff. A lot of people that were running for office were out there. Adam Schwadron, Cindy Buckeye Cordway, Dave Marshark, our friend, Derek Good, of course, Steve Earp. With Jeffco Patriot Initiative put that on. Ken Waller was there. Ken Lucas, who's running for office, was out there. Rumpus, who is, I think that's his name, was running for sheriff as well. I apologize if I got that name wrong. But it was a good old Second Amendment guns, God, patriotism affair, Tim. And I really, really enjoyed it.
Fantastic. And you still have all your fingers and toes, right?
I still have all my fingers and toes. But I tell you, when you shoot a firearm, it gives you a real appreciation for the destructive power that is behind that. And it is for good in many, many cases to protect yourself. But firearm is no joke, especially the high capacity type of weapons that were shot out there. So I'm all Second Amendment, and if our country ever gets crazy or whatever, I want folks that I met on Saturday protecting our rights and putting grease paint on their faces out in the woods taking on the government. You know what I mean?
Well, and that's why we always encourage, you know, just like you have a right to go purchase high speed power tools, we always encourage education, right? With any tool that has the power to hurt, maim, destroy firearms, we have a constitutional right to carry them. I think everybody should carry them, but you also have a responsibility to learn how to use them appropriately. And so we always encourage Second Amendment education as well as possession. Chris, I want to thank you for playing that little clip coming in remembrance of D-Day. I know you have family members, you have elders in your family that served in the Great War. Chris, every day when I go downstairs to my lower level, my little office in the morning and start working early in the morning, I always look at a little black and white photograph on my desk of my grandfather, Jones, who served in the Navy in World War II. And there's a picture of him with a couple of officers on the deck of what looks like a battleship. And then my grandfather Tuno as well, served, on the Italian front, in World War II as well. So I think about all the sacrifice that greatest generation did for us so many decades ago so we could be free. I love that we continue to remember them, to honor them, because they deserve every freaking ounce of it.
Excellent. Good words. Before we come to Zach coming up, the big stories of the day, Tim, that there was a shootout outside the U.S. Embassy in Lebanon. The reports there that it was a Syrian national. I think he has been taken in to custody. Stanford University students broke into the building, to the president's office, ransacked it, and they were escorted out of the building. Hopefully, they were arrested. Crazy things happening. And then we're going to speak with Zach Smith coming up on all of the Trump issues. Have a very interesting case, Tim, that I want to talk to him about that's locally here. It's about, do you remember the young lady that was working for Missouri Department of Transportation on the highway? She was struck by a driver and she was pregnant and was killed. And so her family sued Missouri Department of Transportation for a wrongful death for her, not only her, but the fetus as well. The Supreme Court ruled on that case that the supervisors had official immunity, and so they cannot be charged. I have a personal, not stake, but a personal connection to this case, Tim. The attorney for this young woman is a personal friend of mine. We actually knew her. You were out one day, but he was actually on the show with me and Susie talking about this case last year. So I want to ask Zach about official immunity for state workers, how that applies, plus the issues of Donald Trump and his verdicts and other Supreme Court issues coming up. We got a big, big show for you. You want to continue to listen to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, number one for live and local conservative talk, 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Caitlin Anderson was a pregnant MoDOT worker assigned to a work project in South St. Louis County when a car hit her. She and her unborn son Jax died, as well as her co-worker James Brooks. Muskoff filed a wrongful death lawsuit, and the state's high court just decided the MoDOT supervisors cannot be sued due to what's called the doctrine of official immunity.
4:27 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, and we usually talk to our guest, of course, about the Supreme Court that governs all of the courts here in the United States, but I want to ask Zach about this Missouri Supreme Court, his opinion on it. Joey, let's bring him on.
Zach Smith, legal fellow with the Heritage Foundation.
You know, I ask you a lot of predictions. Can you predict what the Supreme Court probably will do with this action? Zach, good afternoon. A little more context on this case. The plaintiffs argued that because this worker was pregnant, that a barrier or another truck or something should have been provided for her to shield her from oncoming traffic. Welcome to the show, my friend, and hate to hit you with such a weighty case and this early, but how are you?
I'm doing well, Chris. Thanks for having me on. Great to be with you as always.
And thank you.
Certainly tragic facts surrounding that case. And look, despite the legal issues, I think it's obviously, everyone can have great empathy for that family and the suffering they're clearly going through right now.
Talk about the official immunity, though. We hear about this with police officers, but I guess Missouri Supreme Court is saying it also applies to state workers, government workers as well that are outside of the police?
Well, I would have to know a little bit more about the facts of this specific case, Chris, and a little bit more about Missouri law in particular. But what I can say is generally governments and governmental employees are entitled to different types of immunity depending on what federal and state law provides and also depending on the function that they serve for their communities. As a general rule, either the federal government or the state government and any appendages of the state government, whether it's a county, a department, et cetera, they all enjoy sovereign immunity. This is a holdover from when we were under the English legal system and the idea that the king himself couldn't be sued because he was, you know, all powerful, owned all the property. But that concept of sovereign immunity has carried over into American law. Now, the Supreme Court has put different glosses on what that means, different exceptions for when that takes place. And typically, what we're talking about is a little bit different type of immunity. We're talking often about police officers or school administrators. When they're alleged to have violated someone's constitutional rights, they enjoy something called qualified immunity. Which is a little bit different, not quite as protected as sovereign immunity. But basically, the idea behind qualified immunity is that if a police officer or government official, if the law wasn't clear, they acted within the scope of their duties, acted in good faith, then they won't be subjected to the rigors of trial and suit and everything that comes with it. So it's a very interesting case, and I would be fascinated to learn more at some point.
Zach, for those who think, speaking of litigation, Zach, for those who think that lawfare is only confined to the insane liberal left pursuing Donald Trump, I would say au contraire, mon frère, Zach, because I looked at your Twitter feed today, as I often do to see what's on your mind, and I noticed you retweeted a very interesting story from The Hill by a fellow named Chad Ennis, who is with a organization you and I are very familiar with, the Honest Elections Project. Their motto is, it should be easy to vote, hard to cheat. What a concept. Zach, the title
of the piece.
Shouldn't
be controversial at all.
Yeah. Well, I guess if you're Mark Elias, it is, because I know he's mentioned in this article in The Hill, Zach, that's called Sue Till It Turns Blue. Democrats pursue a lawfare election strategy in Wisconsin. Whoa, Zach. So it's not just confined to pursuing Donald Trump and trying to keep him off the ballot. The election interference from the Democrats is even seen everywhere in the swing states, too, isn't it? Zach, tell us what's going on here in Wisconsin under Mark Elias's pursuits.
Yeah, unfortunately, this isn't something that's limited to Wisconsin in particular. It's happening not only in blue states, but in red states, and certainly, as you mentioned, Tim, in swing states in particular, where many on the left, often at the behest of Mark Elias, who runs kind of a boutique shop that brings some of the left's pet challenges to election laws, election procedures that are put in place, but basically the idea to roll back many of the common sense election integrity measures that have been put in place in the wake of 2020 to deal with many of the problems that we saw in that election, many of the provisions that have been put in place to do exactly what you mentioned, to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat. Apparently, these are bad ideas to those on the left and bad ideas to Mark Elias in particular, and so he sues prolifically around the country. He loses a lot of the suits that he brings, and shockingly doesn't often publicize those quite as well. But look, the fact is the time and attention that these lawsuits take to defend against, to explain to the judge or jury, if it gets to that point, why these are common sense measures, that takes away from the actual work of running an election, the actual work of making sure that the voter rolls are clean, that the rules and procedures are being followed. And so even when Mark Elias loses, the idea, I think, generally, is to make it so expensive, so painful to enact these types of common sense provisions that many states will simply say, it's not worth it. We don't want to do it. You know, we'll leave the current less than ideal rules in place. And certainly we as Americans deserve better than that.
We're speaking with Zach Smith, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation and co-host of the SCOTUS 101 podcast. Zach, this is our first opportunity to talk to you since the Trump verdict last week. I want to get your overall thoughts on that. And as well, I want to ask you about Trump attorneys asking the judge to remove the gag order today. Now that the trial is over. Is there any reason this judge would keep that gag order on?
Well, I would certainly think not. The primary purpose of the gag order was supposedly to protect the integrity of the trial proceedings. Now, I think Alvin Bragg and his lawyers are going to ask for or have asked for the gag order to remain in place through the remaining actions that need to take place, the sentencing, potential appeal as well. But look, we've talked about it before. The gag order itself is very problematic from a First Amendment standpoint. Whenever you prohibit someone from speaking, and that's always problematic. That always presents very compelling First Amendment reasons not to do it. And yet those reasons, those First Amendment concerns are only amplified here because Donald Trump, of course, is engaging in core political speech as he campaigns to once again be the president of the United States. Now, in terms of the verdict against Donald Trump, I think it's a very sad day for us as a country. It's a shameful fact that this prosecution was even brought in the first place. There are many appellate issues that I suspect Trump and his legal team will raise based on due process, potential violations of New York state law, other federal constitutional issues as well, including the jury instructions potentially that the judge gave to the jury telling them what the applicable law was. But look, it's a sad day that it's even come to this, and it'll be interesting to see how quickly that appellate process will play out.
Mm-hmm. Speaking to Zach Smith of the Heritage Foundation. Zach, what about this situation with Hunter Biden? Zach, first of all, I find it fascinating that and fascinating and also disheartening that you and I could probably completely put aside our legal acumen and all of our knowledge of the law and look at the Trump case versus the Hunter Biden case and make a determination as to what would happen through a political lens, right, Zach, because of the venue of each of those cases. Donald Trump ended up getting tried in a jurisdiction that was probably, if you examine the jury pool, 90% plus against him, whereas Hunter Biden basically gets to have a trial in his backyard in his home state of Delaware. With dad, just happening to swing by and mom hanging out in the courtroom. I mean, Zach, it can't be as unfortunate as it is to state this. You cannot overlook the home field advantage or disadvantage of venue in these criminal cases, right? Because whether it's right or wrong, it's definitely an influence on the jury pool, isn't it?
Well, certainly it is. And look, the Constitution provides certain venue provisions. There's actually the subject of a very interesting case last year by the Supreme Court about what happens when the government tries you in the wrong venue. So look, these protections are in place for a reason, but I think, as you said, it goes without saying that Donald Trump is facing a very unfavorable, a very hostile jury pool there in the borough of Manhattan, whereas Hunter Biden is likely to face a very sympathetic jury pool in Delaware, the federal court there. But the only reason this case has even gone to trial is because the judge in Delaware rejected a sweetheart plea deal that the Biden administration tried to cut to Hunter Biden so that this case and the related tax case that's taking place in California would never see the light of day. Fortunately, she rejected that plea deal, and now the case is going to trial. Now, what's interesting about this, if you look at what Hunter Biden is accused of, essentially lying on an ATF form, committing some other gun-related violations while being addicted to narcotics, he doesn't really have a legal defense to these crimes, I don't think. And so at the end of the day, he's really just hoping that the jury will feel sorry for him, believe that he's someone who's struggling with addiction, maybe made a mistake, maybe didn't think things through, and that they'll acquit him on that basis. And it'll be interesting to watch because several of the jurors themselves during the voir dire process, or as I call it, the jury picking process, several of the jurors admitted that their family members also struggled with addiction issues. And so it'll be interesting to see how much Hunter Biden and his attorneys play up that sympathy angle, that addiction angle. But I certainly think that is probably the type of angle that Hunter and his lawyers are looking to pursue.
Zach, we are 5 months or so out from an election. Folks are worried of a repeat of 2020 with election irregularities. Recently, the Supreme Court rejected a request from Oregon voters, a group of Oregon voters, who wanted to strike down their state's universal vote-by-mail elections. How familiar are you with that case, and why wouldn't the Supreme Court accept that?
Well, I think part of the reason the Supreme Court might not accept that case, Chris, is because there's something called the Purcell principle that the court has been relying on heavily in many of these election-related challenges. And the Purcell principle, it comes from the name of the case, the Purcell case, where basically the idea is that federal courts don't want to intervene too close to an election to basically alter the rules and procedures that voters have relied on in the run-up to that election. Now, I think the many judges, particularly many of the Supreme Court justices, are particularly attuned to this Purcell principle idea after what happened in 2020, when you had some state and federal judges changing the rules and procedures of elections after some voters had already begun voting. And so Justice Brett Kavanaugh, he's really been at the forefront of articulating this Purcell principle, the need not to upset settled expectations shortly before an election is set to take place, where it'd be very difficult to administer the election if and when a new rule were to be handed down. And so we don't know precisely why justices reject cases, decline to take them up, unless a justice or justices write separately to tell us. But I would suspect it's that Purcell principle that's coming into play, because we've seen the justices applying it further and further and further out prior to elections.
That is Zach Smith, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation and co-host of the SCOTUS 101 podcast. Zach comes to us every single Wednesday with his legal analysis and brilliance. But if you want to see Zach and hear that brilliance in person, Zach will be in St. Louis on June 25th along with Joel Griffith, for our Saving America 2024, the economy and the courts. That's going to be out at the St. Charles Funny Bone, the streets of St. Charles, brought to you by West Magazine and Mid Rivers News Magazine. Get your tickets online. Zach's a very popular fellow, so this thing's going to sell out really quickly. They really do. Our last event sold out. We managed to scrounge some more space to bring people in. So I expect the same thing with Zach and Joel Griffith, June 25th at the St. Charles Funny Bone. Zach, thank you as always, and look forward to seeing you later this month, my friend.
Well, great chatting with you guys as always, and look forward to seeing you as well.
Thank you, Zach. Well, Tim, I don't know if you got a chance to hear Ken Williams' great monologue this morning on his discuss with the Trump verdict, but it was powerful. And so that's going to be Chris's Corner coming up here. We're going to play Ken Williams' monologue. Very, very good. And I'm proud to say I worked with Ken, and you can really hear his passion.
Mm-hmm. Really, really excited to hear that. I listened to a big chunk of the show this morning, Chris, but I didn't hear that particular part. So I'm just as excited to hear that as our audience is, which is going to be next.
So coming up, Ken Williams, executive producer of the Vic Porcelli Show, will hear his monologue from this morning. 5:07 will be the speaker's thumb speech. And at 5:24, our special guest, Chris Ruddy, CEO of Newsmax. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL. Number one for live and local conservative talk.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
4:45 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. And Joey, that's the perfect song to come in with, because our good friend Ken Williams, Tim, he let it whip this morning. And let's just get into it. Ken Williams.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Ken Williams, pace the floor, pace the deck all weekend long. I want to talk about this Trump thing. Well, Ken, now's your time. Turn my mic off and you just go.
Yeah, Vic, I'll tell you, you're right, though, when you say that I was pacing. I was, you know, I was so beside myself when it came out. We said that we thought it was going to happen, but when it actually did happen in the United States of America, I just sat there and so many things were going through my head. So many, in fact, that I had to write it all down, and then I cut out a ton of stuff. So after my surgery, I was thinking about it before the surgery, and I went home, opened my computer, and found out that Donald Trump, our former president of the United States, now private citizen. And this is most importantly, the major and primary opponent to the current president has been convicted on 34 felonies. My first thought was anger, of course. He's looking at all the evidence of all the players involved in their backgrounds. I thought, surely, no way, in our justice system we have in America, at the end of the day, the facts will come out and the truth will be exposed about the lawfare being used in this particular case anyway. I thought the tactics of Fannie Willis, Letitia James, Alvin Bragg, they were all running their candidacies on the platform that Trump should be thrown in jail. I thought all this stuff would come out. Instead, President Trump was convicted on a state misdemeanor attached to a bogus federal case. I got the sick feeling in my stomach, Vic. I mean, it was, yeah, the surgery, but I think it was so much more of that. The other part of it was the realization that we no longer live in a country of laws. I know it sounds strong, but it's the way I feel. We no longer live in a country that holds our Constitution in the highest regard. There were so many rights of Donald Trump that were trampled on by Judge Merchan. There were so many that they announced. I realized at that moment that we now live in a country where a sitting president can imprison his opponents. Now, listen to that. There are other countries in South America right now that are saying, we do not do this in our country. This is the first time in my life that I've ever heard another country, a third world country, say that they do something. They don't do something, and we do it. That just upsets me so much. The Biden family is the most corrupt first family in American history, primarily because they're getting away with everything Biden did from day one, has been following the instruction of Barack Obama to continue to fundamentally change the United States to become the second-tier country that is more aligned with other nations around the world than even the people that live in this country. Nobody is going to convince me otherwise. This was and is the primary goal of Obama and all of the many people behind the scenes here, tearing this country apart. These left-wing radicals thrive on division, Vic. We've talked about this. The left-wing thrives on division. If they don't have it, they fall. Think about it. On day one, Biden signs 93 executive orders tearing apart America's energy independence. Why? Is this a plan to create a brave new America that is green and thriving under all new energy technology that we have? No. This can't be the reason, because there is no technology available. It's just not there. It wouldn't support it. And yet we've spent over $1 trillion of our tax money toward green initiatives. Over the last 8 years, we've seen the left become more radicalized and militant while accusing conservatives of being the extremists. These labels are important now. Words repeated enough become truth, and that truth becomes fact. Recently, Alex Soros, now check this out. He sent out the order for the media to keep repeating that Donald Trump is a convicted criminal. Why? Because it's true? No. Because it causes doubt and division among Americans. Again, the radical left thrives on division. We used to be able to just live our lives trusting that we didn't have to keep track of what the government was doing. We didn't have to do that. We could simply go on and move on with our lives, do whatever we wanted. And whenever we wanted to, we could just peek into the political system every once, maybe every couple of years, to see how things were going. Those days are gone. Or you know what? Maybe they never were. Maybe this is the way that the left had planned to take over every facet of our lives from the beginning. We now live in an era where there are no longer lines separating culture, lifestyles, ideology, and politics. It's all about politics now, baby. The left globalists have made it impossible to separate these various parts of our lives. We no longer live in a country that holds firmly to the Constitution of the United States. The Biden administration has completely ignored the separation of powers between the legislative, executive, and judicial branches. He's done it. Biden, and I should say Obama too, ignored the Supreme Court ruling against student loan reimbursement. Biden was able to unilaterally impose giving billions of our taxpayer dollars to people for the sole purpose of buying the votes of young American voters. This one act by Biden minimized both the Supreme Court and the legislative branches of our government. This was also a big FU to the American people who paid off their student loans and those who chose not to go to college because it was too expensive. Because now, hey, everybody, guess what? We're all on the hook for it, for millions of other people's student loans. I think this verdict in New York against President Trump has hit me in a way to reevaluate everything that I've ever known about America. And it's sad. It hurts. It's sad. But I think it's a good thing as well. Our Constitution is being ripped apart by the fascist left. There are no longer just words. We have examples of this happening. We can talk about the border and the replacement of the Democrat Party's new constituency that they have. We can talk about the relationship between the Biden-Obama administration and China,
Or how about their relationships with the WHO or WEF and every other globalist organization, including the, and especially the UN? They, by the way, need to be packing. We do not, we should not be even relating to the UN any longer. 16 years ago, Barack Obama started flooding the courts with left-wing judges, and we are seeing the fruits of his labor today. Meanwhile, Biden recently bragged about the over 200 diverse new judges installed by his administration. I know that I sound very pessimistic right now about the future, but we really need to identify what is actually happening before we can fight it. We need to be strong in supporting President Trump, because it's not just about Trump. It's about what happens. What happens if we don't support him? The media is going to keep pushing the Soros-approved message that is, it's over for Trump because he is a unanimously convicted felon on all 34 counts against him. And these are important words to remember, because every time you hear it, you need to push back on it. We'll be hearing these words a lot heading to the election. Unanimity, an important word, because it's saying that everybody voted against Trump. And so you should too. There are going to be people who are just beginning to get the message, because that's when people start paying attention as we near the election. The media will need to keep reminding them that President Trump was not convicted by a jury of his peers. This was a trial that would have never happened to anyone not running for president. They easily would have moved this case to another city and state instead of the deep blue city of New York and the deep blue state of New York. It would be easy to turn our backs on President Trump, but the left is no longer about compromise, everybody. If they win, we will all face the same type of judgment that we see going on against Trump right now. And I'm not taught, you can see it in everyday life. They can do things, regulations behind the scenes, digital currency, everything. I know this sounds impossible and won't happen in America, but how many things have we seen over the last 3.5 years that have surprised and shocked us about the Biden-Obama administration? Parents labeled domestic terrorists. White men are the greatest threat to America. Maxine Waters just said this yesterday about MAGA supporters. Illegal aliens voting in elections. Did you know Chuck Schumer wants to put all illegal aliens, give them a path to citizenship by putting them in our military, training them up, arming them, and saying, now, you don't have any obligations to the United States, of course, but you are now an American citizen. Stay strong. We really need to stand with President Trump, you guys, or there will be nothing left to stand for. If America falls, there is nowhere else in the world to go to be free, nowhere else.
And that is Ken Williams, executive producer of the Vic Porcelli Show here weekdays 9 to 11, affectionately known as Thunder Stealer. Well, Tim, he didn't steal the thunder there. He brought the thunder. I agree with him 1,000% and couldn't have said it any better.
Ken has, we have a unique set of individuals at this station. We have people that have been elected officials. We have people that have never been in elected office. We have people that have made politics their life. And we have people like Ken who have just come to it naturally by reading, by watching, by listening, by learning. Ken is Ken American to me, right? Yep. Right, Chris? He's Ken American. And I think in that very passionate way, he encapsulates a lot of what people think. And you don't even have to be a fan of Donald Trump to agree with everything Ken said. Do you really think we live in the freest country on earth anymore? I tend to wonder, Chris. I mean, well, look, we have lawfare going. We just talked about it with Zach Smith. We have lawfare going on in many states against normal average American human beings that doesn't get reported as widely as the lawfare against Donald Trump. So I think people need to wake up, smell the coffee, and realize, is even if you don't like the Republican Party, you have to admit they are the party that actually wants to perpetuate and save America. Mm-hmm. And there's another party that wants this country to turn into something that's very, very different.
So I want to get in our closing minutes here before break, Joey and Tim, I want to ask you both. So this morning was A Star Is Born, and what we'll be seeing in the future Sunday, a Ken Williams show.
No, I mean, of course, he's half the reason we have one of the coveted NBA awards on the wall.
That is
over
true.
There.
Tim, what do you think? Ken Williams show?
He's already an award winner. I'm not sure why he doesn't have his own show already. You know what I mean? Come on, Jeff Allen. Well, let's get rolling.
Speaker stump speech at 5:07.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the fact that state public policy matters. And as Exhibit A, that would be the lunatics who have run the insane asylum in California.
And our special guest at 524, you want to stick around, Chris Ruddy, founder and CEO of Newsmax. You want to stick around to see what he says about the state of television journalism. And we'll ask him about any potential conversations he had with the president. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.